Finally, it enlists continuing support. By having it on the wall, where others can see it, you're inviting interest and participation. It helps to have your friends and relatives cheering on the sideline. Think about the money talks you'll have. Final inspiration from Linda and Mike Lenich. Linda and Mike Lenich started the 9-step program in July 1992, soon after they heard about it on the radio. At that time, they were $52,000 in debt, car loan and mortgage. By July 1993, simply by following the steps, including the supercharged motivation that came from their wall chart, they were debt-free. But this isn't the total story. If you look at their chart, you'll see that they traced their debt back to 1986, when it was $75,000 plus. That was when they were following a quote-unquote surefire make-a-million-beat-the-market, quote, stock and commodity scheme that plunged them for a while into up to $125,000 of debt. Part of Mike's love of Your Money, Your Life was that this program worked because they became aware, committed, and conscious. He never again wanted to experience the gut-wrenching, face-blanching panic that struck when the surefire scheme precipitously failed. Taking the slow and steady route, they still achieved FI many years ago. Linda has dedicated much of her time since to her great love, quilt making. Mike cultivated his guitar playing and even now makes some side money from playing gigs in clubs. For many years, he also led groups applying the steps of the program to their lives, and even now uses his money smarts to help older people manage their retirement savings. Summary of Step 5. Make and keep up to date a chart of your total monthly income and your total monthly expenses. Look at it often. Share it with others. Money talk questions. Social support is a key to behavior change. It keeps you inspired and accountable. Using the suggestions in the epilogue for how to have a money talk, raise these questions in your daily reflections, with your partner, or in social groups. Remember, adding why at the end of any question will take it deeper. Adding how has society shaped my answer to any question will take it wider. There are no right answers. How much money do you need to be happy? What or who can help you change your relationship with money? What might change if you could know what others, a friend, a date, a boss, a stranger, earn? What motivates you to save? What helps you save money? Chapter 6. The American Dream on a Shoestring. It is both sad and telling that there is no word in the English language for living at the peak of the fulfillment curve, always having plenty but never being burdened with excess. The word would need to evoke the careful stewarding of tangible resources, time, money, material possessions, coupled with the joyful expansion of spiritual resources, creativity, intelligence, love. Unfortunately, you can't say, I'm enoughing, or I'm choosing a life of enoughness, to explain the mixture of affluence and thrift that comes from following the steps in this program. The terms simplicity and minimalism address the lack of excess, but can seem austere or even monastic. The technique of tidying up adds the desire to spark joy, but is still focused mostly on stuff and not on the deeper issues of time, money, and fulfillment. The word frugality used to serve that function, but by the middle of the 20th century, it seemed like a quaint notion of Depression-era grandparents. How did frugality lose favor? It is, after all, a perennial ideal across time and cultures, as well as a cornerstone of the American character. In ancient times, both Socrates and Plato praised the golden mean. Both the Old Testament, give me neither poverty nor wealth, but only enough. And the teachings of Jesus, ye cannot serve both God and money, all extol the value of material simplicity in enriching the life of the spirit. In American history, well-known individuals like Ben Franklin, Henry David Thoreau, Ralph Waldo Emerson, Robert Frost, as well as groups like the Amish, the Quakers, Hutterites, Mennonites, have all carried forward the virtue of thrift, both out of respect for the earth and out of a thirst for a touch of heaven. And the challenges of building our nation required frugality of most of our citizens. Indeed, the wealth we enjoy today is the result of centuries of frugality. As we said earlier, the more is better consumer culture is a Johnny-come-lately on the American scene. Our bedrock is frugality, and it's high time we made friends again with the word and the practice. Let's explore the word frugality to see if we can't redeem it as the key to fulfillment. The pleasures of frugality. We looked up frugal in the dictionary and found, quote, practicing or marked by economy, as in the expenditure of money or the use of material resources, end quote. That sounds about right, a serviceable, practical, and fairly colorless word. None of the elegance or grace of the enoughness that FIers experience. But when we dig deeper, the dictionary tells us that frugal shares a Latin root with frug, meaning virtue, frux, meaning fruit or value, and fru, meaning to enjoy or have the use of. Now we're talking. Frugality is enjoying the virtue of getting good value for every minute of your life energy and from everything you have the use of. That's not just interesting, that's transformative. Frugality means enjoying what we have. If you have 10 dresses but still feel you have nothing to wear, you may be a compulsive shopper. The thrill of getting is greater than the joy of having and using. But if you have 10 dresses and have enjoyed wearing all of them for years, you are frugal. Waste lies not in the number of possessions, but in the failure to enjoy them. Your success at being frugal is measured not by your penny pinching, but by your degree of enjoyment of the material world. Enjoyment of the material world? Isn't that materialism? Aren't frugal people anti-materialists? It's all in how you pay attention. For materialists, the world exists to be used and often used up. Also, materialists may measure their worth by what they have or how other people regard what they have, leading to a more is better and it's never enough treadmill. Frugal people, however, make sure to get the full pleasure from everything. A dandelion or bouquet of roses, a single strawberry or gourmet meal. A materialist might consume the juice of 5 oranges as a prelude to a pancake breakfast. A frugal person, on the other hand, might relish eating a single orange, enjoying the color and texture of the whole fruit, the smell and the light spray that comes as you begin to peel it, the translucence of each section, the flood of flavors that pours out as a section bursts over the tongue, and the thrift of saving the peels for baking. To be frugal means to have a high joy-to-stuff ratio. If you get 1 unit of joy for every material possession, that's frugal. But if you need 10 possessions to even begin registering on the joy meter, you're missing the point of being alive. There's a word in Spanish that encompasses all this, aprovechar. It means to use something wisely, be it a sunny day at the beach or leftovers made into a delicious new meal. It means getting full value from life, enjoying all the good that each moment and each thing has to offer. You can aprovecha a simple meal, a bowl of ripe strawberries, or a cruise in the Bahamas. There's nothing miserly about aprovechar. It's a succulent word, full of sunlight and flavor. If only frugal sounded so sweet. The more is better and it's never enough mentality in North America fails the frugality test not solely because of the excess, but because of the lack of enjoyment of what we already have. Indeed, North Americans have been called materialists, but that's a misnomer. All too often, it's not material things we enjoy as much as what these things symbolize. Conquest, status, success, achievement, a sense of worth, and even favor in the eyes of the Creator. Once we've acquired the dream house, the status car, or the perfect partner, we rarely stop to enjoy them thoroughly. Instead, we're off and running after the next coveted acquisition. Another lesson we can derive from the dictionary definition of frugal is the recognition that we don't need to possess a thing to enjoy it. We merely need to use it. If we are enjoying an item, whether or not we own it, we're being frugal. For many of life's pleasures, it may be far better to use something than to possess it and pay in time and energy for the upkeep. Fortunately, young people today seem less wedded to their stuff than prior generations. Due to a combination of limited incomes and growing access to on-demand, temporary use of everything, from movies to audiobooks to cars, they're questioning the benefits of ownership and discovering the pleasures of the sharing economy. Frugality, then, is also learning to share, to see the world as ours rather than theirs and mine. Quote unquote, a man's home is his castle. Once a promise of greater autonomy has devolved into subdivisions of McMansions, each man a feudal lord. If we want something, or wanted it in the past, or imagine we might want it in the future, we think we must bring it inside the boundaries of the world called mine. What we fail to recognize is that what is outside the walls of mine doesn't belong to the enemy. It belongs to the rest of us. While not explicit in the word, being frugal and being happy with having enough means that more will be available for others. This is where frugality is both practical and ethical. Sharing resources means life gets less costly, and the range of things and services available to each one gets wider. Sharing resources, from lawnmowers to cars to guest rooms to our used excess, which we unload to the resale shop or in online or local trading groups, means that fewer resources must be extracted from the earth, burned, or used briefly and trashed. We have fewer plastics in the ocean, less garbage in our dumps, and fewer toxins everywhere, just by sharing. From tool libraries to online groups that facilitate selling or giving away your surplus, to the loan of your lawnmower or wheelbarrow to neighbors, who might thank you with a loaf of bread or dog sitting, sharing a bit of wealth makes life richer for both giver and receiver. In addition to the good feeling you get when you give from your bounty to others and others give to you, you get community through the many daily exchanges of time, helping out, gifting, and even offering a listening ear. And community is the real treasure. As part of a community, you can relax into belonging and getting a helping hand when you need it. Frugality isn't being a lone and lonely ranger, perfect in your self-reliance. It's discovering that you have more to give and more to enjoy than mere material possessions. In fact, financial independence is one key to successfully transitioning from more is better to enough is enough. Frugality is the balance we seek. Frugality is being efficient and harvesting happiness from the world you live in. Frugality is right use, which sounds appropriately like righteous. The wise stewarding of money, time, energy, space, and possessions. Goldilocks expressed it well when she declared the porridge not too hot, not too cold, but just right. Frugality is something like that. Not too much, not too little, but just right. Nothing is wasted or left unused. It's a clean machine, perfect, sleek, simple yet elegant. It's that magic word, enough, the peak of the fulfillment curve, the jumping off point for a life of being fulfilled, of learning, and of contributing. Keep this in mind as we explore ways to save money. We aren't talking about being cheap, making do, or being a skinflint or a tightwad. We're talking about creative frugality, a way of life in which you get the maximum fulfillment for each unit of life energy spent. In fact, now that you know that money is your life energy, it seems foolish to consider wasting it on stuff you don't enjoy and never use. Recalling the arithmetic we did in Chapter 2, you'll remember that if you are 40 years old, actuarial tables indicate that you have just 356,532 hours of life energy left in your bank. That may seem like a lot now, but those hours will feel very precious at the end of your life. Spend them well now, and you won't have regrets later. Striking a balance between maximizing earning from paid employment and building other forms of wealth like friendships, networks, and skills is a lifelong process. In the end, this creative frugality is an expression of self-esteem. It honors the life energy you invest in your material possessions. Saving those minutes and hours of life energy through careful consuming is the ultimate in self-respect. Step 6. Valuing your life energy, minimizing spending. This step involves the intelligent use of your life energy, i.e. money, and the conscious lowering or elimination of expenses. Consider the sections that follow as a menu of options. Explore the ones that intrigue or inspire you, and leave the rest. There's something for everyone here, but not everything will be for you. It might be instructive, though, to ask yourself why you are discarding some ideas and adopting others. You may encounter some childhood programming, some cultural myths, and even some revealing information about your values. Remember, these ideas are opportunities, not shoulds. Frugality is about enjoyment, not penny pinching. Happy saving, or should we say, happy frugaling. One sure way to save money. Stop trying to impress other people. It is an endless and fruitless waste of time and money. Plus, others are likely so busy trying to impress you that they will, at best, not notice your efforts. At worst, they will resent you for one-upping them. When Thorsten Veblen published The Theory of the Leisure Class in 1899, it didn't make a big splash. But the term he coined, conspicuous consumption, has made it into the heart of our culture. In the foreword to Veblen's book, social commentator and writer Stuart Chase summarized his thesis this way. People above the line of base subsistence in this age and all earlier ages do not use the surplus which society has given them primarily for useful purposes. They do not seek to expand their own lives, to live more wisely, intelligently, understandingly, but to impress other people with the fact that they have a surplus, spending money, time, and effort quite uselessly in the pleasurable business of inflating the ego. But just because conspicuous consumption is a cross-cultural and evolutionary aberration of the human species doesn't mean that you have to fall prey to it. Social media makes unhooking from self-comparison even harder, as your friends are constantly posting humble brags about their exotic vacations, their meals at upscale restaurants, or their newest toys. If you stop trying to impress other people, you will save thousands, perhaps millions of dollars. If you must, impress people with how much money you saved with your creative do-it-yourself project or travel hack, or the natural beauty you experienced while camping instead of going to a resort. 10 sure ways to save money. 1. Don't go shopping. If you don't go shopping, you won't spend money. Of course, if you really need something from a store, go and buy it. But don't just go shopping. It used to be so simple. If you didn't make the effort to physically go to a store, you couldn't buy anything. Now, with a tap on your phone, just about anything in the world can be delivered to your doorstep within days or even hours. Even if you choose not to actively shop online, Being connected at all means you are constantly exposed to advertising that's increasingly targeted to your wants and needs, filling your screens, feeds, and inboxes with quote-unquote relevant offers to help you part with your money. News content, which used to be sacrosanct, is intermingled with paid advertorials. Used wisely, these offers can help you get things you need for less, but it is also much easier to waste money on stuff you don't need when you don't have to get in your car and drive to the mall. For the offline retail world, a 2014 scientific telephone survey of 1,000 adult Americans found that 75% said that they had made an impulse buy, those spur-of-the-moment purchases you didn't intend to make when you entered the store. Excitement was the biggest stimulus overall, but men tended to buy while drunk and women while bored or sad, with both genders doing it when angry. Half reported regret when the bill came due. Caveat emptor. Online, with your interests and habits being tracked and shared among search engines, social media platforms, and advertisers, sophisticated recommendation algorithms are working to drive impulse buys. And since you don't even need to leave home for one-click shopping, it can be even more impulsive. Why is shopping one of our favorite national pastimes? More than the simple act of acquiring needed goods and services, shopping attempts to fill, but obviously fails since we have to shop so often, a myriad of needs. For a reward after a job well done, for an antidepressant, for esteem boosting, self-assertion, status, and nurturing. And in the case of malls, for socializing and time structuring. Consumption seems to be our favorite high, our nationally sanctioned addiction, the all-American form of substance abuse. What to do? Don't use shopping as a reward, a relief, or entertainment. Reduce your exposure to tempting offers by opting out of promotional emails, or at the very least filtering them out of your primary inbox. Be savvy enough about media to know who's paying for the content you're consuming, so you can recognize hidden advertising when you see it. Most important, develop a discipline of buying only what you need. It's like working a muscle, your frugality muscle. Over time, it strengthens, and soon enough, you're no longer swayed by targeted advertising. You may be saving more than money. You may be saving your sanity, not to mention your soul. 2. Live within your means. This notion is so outmoded that some listeners might not even know what it signifies. To live within your means is to buy only what you can prudently afford, to avoid debt unless you have an assurance that you will be able to pay it promptly, and to always have something put away for a rainy day. It was a quite fashionable way to live a few short generations ago, before the expansion of credit. There are two sides to the coin of living beyond your means. The shiny side is that you can have everything you want right now. The tarnished side is that you will pay for it with your life in interest. Buying on credit, from cars to houses to vacations, often results in paying three times the purchase price. Is going to Hawaii for 2 weeks this year worth working perhaps four additional months next year to pay it off? This doesn't mean you have to cut up all your credit cards. You just have to avoid using them if you can't pay them off right away. We recognize that credit cards can be a way to put food on the table for those who unexpectedly hit hard times. However, it's important to distinguish between necessity and indulgence so you have as little debt as possible to pay off. Living within your means suggests that you wait until you have the money before you buy something. This also gives you the benefit of avoiding interest charges. It also gives you a waiting period during which you may well discover that you don't want some of those things after all. The bright side of living within your means is that you will use and enjoy what you have and harvest a full measure of fulfillment from it, whether it's your 10-year-old but still great car, your favorite coat, or your old house. It also means that you can weather the economic bad times when they come, and they will come. 3. Take care of what you have. There is one thing we all have that we want to last a long time, our bodies. Simple attention to proven preventive practices will save you a lot of money. Taking care of your teeth, for example, can save thousands in dental bills. And eating what you know agrees with your body, judging by your energy, not your taste buds, may save you thousands in expensive procedures, not to mention your life. Extend this principle to all your possessions. Mend ripped clothes, resole worn shoes, replace your computer's old hard drive or add more RAM. Regular oil changes are known to extend the life of your car. Cleaning your tools keeps them functioning at peak performance. How many hair dryers and vacuum cleaners have choked to death on hairballs? Dusting your refrigerator coils conserves energy and could save your refrigerator. One big difference between living beings and machines is that machines are not self-healing. If you ignore an occasional headache, it will probably go away. If you ignore a funny noise coming from your computer or your car, you may incur major and costly damage. Many of us have lived with excess for so long that it no longer occurs to us to maintain what we have. There's always more where that came from, we tell ourselves. But more costs money, and more may not, in the long run, be available. We need to rewire our brains to think repair rather than replace. 4. Wear it out. What's the last item you actually wore out? If it weren't for the fashion industry and boredom, we could all enjoy the same basic wardrobe for many years. Survey your possessions. Are you simply upgrading or duplicating last year's phone, furniture, kitchenware, and linens? Or are you truly wearing them out? Think how much money you would save if you simply decided to use things even 20% longer. If you tend to upgrade your linens every 3 years, try replacing them every 4 years. If you trade in your car every 4 years, try extending that to 5. If you buy a new coat every winter, see whether every third winter would do just as well. And when you're about to buy something, ask yourself, do I already have one of these that is in perfectly usable condition? Another way to save money is to ask, before trashing something, whether there might be another way to use part or all of it. Old dishcloths and worn-out clothing become cleaning rags. Old magazines become art materials. The web is full of creative do-it-yourself life hacks that can help you reuse everyday items. A word of caution to the already frugal. Using something until you wear it out doesn't mean using it until it wears you out. If you must continually fiddle with a lamp to make it work, and you've already tried repairing it, it may not be worth your life energy to coax it along for another year. If your car is taking you for a ride, costing more hours in tinkering or more money in repairs than it's giving you in service, buy a newer one. If your knees are suffering from running shoes that have lost their bounce, it would be cheaper to buy a new pair on sale than to have a knee surgery. 5. Do it yourself. Can you replace a light bulb or other simple part in your car? Fix a plumbing leak? Do your taxes? Make your own gifts? Change the tire on your bicycle? Bake a cake from scratch? Build a bookshelf? Refinish furniture? Plant a garden? Design your own website? Cut your family's hair? Form your own nonprofit corporation? It used to be that life was simpler and we learned basic life skills from our parents in the process of growing up. Now, for the most part, we are consumers of goods and services provided by others. To reverse that trend, just ask yourself when you're about to hire an expert, can I do this myself? What would it take to learn how? Would it be a useful skill to know? The maker revolution is putting do-it-yourself back in fashion. Maker spaces, where electronics, fabrics, wood, and wire can be repurposed with flair, are popping up everywhere. Granted, our electronics have gotten so technical that a do-it-yourselfer would have trouble figuring out how to even get into the guts to fix something. For example, back in the day, a car was a machine that was fixable by a backyard mechanic. Now cars are rolling computers that do everything, including drive themselves at times, and require professional technicians to service them. Years ago, when Tina Yu was young and lived in Fiji with her doctor husband for several months, she was embarrassed by how the native Fijians seemed to revere them. She tried to diminish their respect to an appropriate level, but they would have none of it. Then she discovered that since the Fijians made and could repair every single thing they depended on to live, they assumed that Tina and Charles had made their transistor radio, watch, and typewriter. They were unable to understand that these things were made by others, and that Tina and Charles had no idea how. Basic living and survival skills can be learned through websites, books, online courses, adult education classes, and the world's growing repository of how to make and fix everything, YouTube. Every breakdown can be used as an opportunity for learning and empowerment. What you can't do or choose not to do, you can hire others to do for you and then tag along for the ride. Every bit of your energy invested in solving these breakdowns not only teaches you something you need to know for the next time, but helps prevent mistakes and reduce the bill. Sure, it's maddeningly cheap now to replace some things rather than repair them. But if you are curious or want to be empowered or are simply revolted by the image of future generations dealing with your trashed stuff, you can hop online and learn. One FIer tells the story of how her heating system failed one winter. Three companies sent out repair people to assess the problem and make a bid. Each one told her with absolute certainty what the problem was. Unfortunately, none of their diagnoses or solutions matched. So she did her own research, meditated on the Rube Goldberg maze of pipe, and came to an educated guess and chose the company that came closest to her analysis, thus saving her hundreds of dollars of unnecessary and possibly destructive work. By staying with the repairman and observing his work, she was also able to avert a few more expensive mistakes and to save expensive time by doing some of the simpler tasks. A typical working person might have paid several times what she did to have the job done and then felt fortunate to have two paychecks, quote, since the cost of living in this modern world is so high, end quote. 6. Anticipate your needs. Forethought in purchasing can bring significant savings. With enough lead time, you will likely find the items you need at a cheaper price. Keep a list of things you anticipate needing in the coming year. Get to know the brands, features, and typical price ranges for those items. Use the tools from your favorite deal sites, online retailers, or classified advertising sites like Craigslist to receive notifications when the items you need become available or change prices. Being ready to pounce on a deal will help ensure that you get the item at the sale price, since many of the best deals are gone in days, hours, or even minutes. Watch for seasonal bargains around major holidays, especially at brick-and-mortar stores that still advertise in local newspapers. For expensive items like cars, computers, or phones, waiting until next year's model is about to come out can get you a big discount on this year's model. By simply observing the poor condition of your car's left rear tire while it still has some life left, or knowing when you need to take your next flight, you can anticipate a need. In shorter term, shopping at the corner convenience store can be very expensive. Anticipating your needs, that you'll be wanting evening snacks, that you'll run out of milk midweek, or that your supply of toilet paper is running low, can eliminate running out to the corner store to pick up these items. Instead, you can purchase them during your supermarket shopping, or on a run to the office supply store, or online. These can result in significant savings over the long term. Anticipating your needs also eliminates one of the biggest threats to your frugality, impulse buying. If you haven't anticipated needing something when you leave your house at 3:05, chances are you don't need it at 3:10 when you are standing at the Gazinga Spin counter in the corner store. We're not saying you should buy only things that are on your premeditated shopping list, although that isn't a bad idea for compulsive shoppers. We are saying that you must be scrupulously honest when you're out and about, saying, I anticipate needing this, as you're drooling over the left-handed Bibelfitzer or the cashmere sweater, is not the same as having already anticipated needing one and recognizing that this particular one is a bargain. You may have heard of Parkinson's Law, that work expands so as to fill the time available for its completion. The corollary is, needs expand to encompass whatever you want to buy on impulse. 7. Research value, quality, durability, multiple use, and price. Research your purchases. Read reviews, comments, and crowdsourced ratings from trusted sites and online marketplaces. Decide what features are most important to you. Don't just be a bargain junkie and automatically buy the cheapest item available. Durability might be a criteria for something you plan to use daily for 20 years. One obvious way of saving money is to spend less on each item you buy. But it's equally true that spending $40 on a tool that lasts 10 years instead of buying a $30 one that will need to be replaced in 5 years will save you $20 in the long run. Versatility is also a factor. Buying one item for $10 that will serve the purpose of 4 different $5 items will net you a savings of $10. One heavy-duty kitchen pot can, and perhaps should, replace half a dozen specialty appliances, like a rice cooker and a crock pot and a Dutch oven, a deep-fat fryer and a spaghetti cooker. So if you really expect to be using an item, buying for durability and for multiple purposes can be a good savings technique. But if you'll be using the item only occasionally, you may not want to spend the extra dollars on a high-quality product. Knowing what your needs are and knowing the whole range of what's available will allow you to choose just the right item. You can also evaluate quality by developing a sharp eye and carefully examining what you are buying. Are the seams in a piece of clothing ample? Are the edges finished? Is the fabric durable? Are the screws holding the appliance together sturdy enough for the job? Is the material strong or flimsy? Is the furniture nailed, stapled, or screwed? You'll become an expert materialist, knowing materials so well that you can read the probable longevity of an item the way a forester can read the age and history of a fallen tree. 8. Buy it for less. There are numerous ways to get what you need for less. Comparison shop. Deciding where to buy something involves trade-offs between price and values such as convenience, selection, support for your local economy, and environmental and social justice concerns. You may be willing to pay more for an item from a local independent store than you would for an item ordered online, but how much more? To decide, you need to be able to compare prices. Use meta-search sites or browser add-ons that allow you to check pricing on many sites simultaneously. For local stores that don't have their inventory online, call them to find out what's in stock, what they can order, and the best price they can offer you. Many stores, both brick-and-mortar and online, offer price matching, in which they'll honor a lower price from stores in the vicinity or from a select list of online retailers. Some retailers will even refund you the difference if you find the same item cheaper elsewhere within a specific number of days after your purchase. Especially for expensive items, being a skilled comparison shopper can save you thousands of dollars. Bargain. You can ask for discounts when paying cash. You can ask for discounts for less than perfect items. You can ask for the sale price even if the sale begins tomorrow or ended yesterday. You can ask for further discounts on items already marked down. You can ask for discounts if you buy a number of items at the same time. You can ask for discounts anywhere, anytime. Nothing ventured, nothing gained. Haggling is a time-honored tradition. The list price of any consumer item is usually inflated. If you're buying a new car, you no longer need to go in and haggle blindly. the dealer's invoice cost. And often other incentives they're getting that month can be found online, so you can more easily start bargaining at a fair price. For each new car I've purchased, I've called all the dealers within 100 miles and have gotten every car for 30 to 50% off the list price. For example, in 2017, I spotted a used Sunraider camper on a car lot. Knowing the value and rarity of these classics and that my days of tenting are over, I took it for a test drive. It sputtered and chugged up hills, but with my knowledge of old-style internal combustion engines, I knew just how to fix it. It had suffered some water damage. A latch didn't work. I drove it back with a frown. Nope, I don't want to buy this. Too many problems. The dealer asked, what price might make it worth it? I came back with half the sticker price out the door. Sold, he said. You have nothing to lose by asking for a discount at any store, from your local hardware store to a clothing emporium. A case in point was my recent outing to buy new running shoes. A $95 list price pair was sitting on the manager's special rack with no price. They fit perfectly. I asked a salesman what they would cost. $39.99, he replied. Would you take 30? I asked. Surveying what he had left, he said, $28. I could have pointed out that haggling etiquette suggests that his counteroffer be higher, not lower than mine, but I was astute enough to shut my mouth and open my wallet and take advantage of a great bargain. By the way, this strategy works best at independently owned stores, where the owner has more authority to make instant decisions. So if the chain store has it for less, at least give the independent local store owner a chance to meet that price. You can also buy it used. Re-examine your attitudes about buying used items. Most of us live in used houses. Someone else probably built your home and inaugurated the shower, toilet, fridge, and more. The bigger cost for a new car in its first year of ownership is the depreciation, which averages almost 20% of the purchase price. Buy a car that's a few years or even just a few months old, and you can save thousands of dollars. But what about everything else? Online marketplaces like Craigslist and eBay are great places for finding used items to buy. Social media apps can be marketplaces for matching people with unused stuff to those with unmet needs. Like cars, new furniture loses its value quickly, so buying a mint-condition sofa or dining set used on Craigslist will usually save you a bundle. If you wouldn't be caught dead in a Goodwill thrift store, take a closer look around your town. Thrift stores have long since become fashionable emporiums. Clothing, kitchenware, furniture, drapes, all can be found in thrift stores, and you may be surprised at the high quality you find in many of them. As a matter of fact, donating brand new items to thrift stores is one way that shopaholics justify excess purchases. If you just can't bring yourself to shop at a thrift store, consider consignment shops. The prices are higher, but the quality is often higher as well. In our experience, thrift stores are best for clothing, but garage sales are best for appliances, furniture, and household items. If you're an early bird, arriving before the seller even has a chance at their morning coffee, you can often find exceptional buys, unless you get shooed away because you are too early. On the other hand, the later in the day you go to a garage sale, the more eager people will be to get rid of the stuff for a song. Swap meets and flea markets still exist in some places. There you'll find merchants of every stripe displaying their wares. Shrewd hucksters, buyer beware, collectors of every kind, and families hoping to unload their excess before moving across the country. Whether you're bargain hunting at a garage sale or on Craigslist, make sure you're really saving money on something you need, rather than accumulating more junk you don't need just because, it's such a deal. The old saying, one man's trash is another man's treasure, also brings to mind ways to get used things without paying a penny using the FreeCycle Network or the Buy Nothing Project. Large old windows removed from a house renovation become a greenhouse for a farmer instead of going to a landfill. These person-to-person hand-me-down networks are win-win for both parties and for the planet. 9. Meet your needs differently. The principle of substitution says that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of ways to meet a need. Traditional economics would have you believe that more, better, or different stuff can satisfy almost any need and is just a credit card swipe away. But who says frugal pleasures are less pleasurable because they are less pricey? For example, what's the best way to lift your spirits? An antidepressant? Running? Cognitive therapy? A change of scenery? Going to a funny movie? Helping someone in a worse pickle? Retail therapy? Which works best for you? Do you have just one strategy or many different ones? When you feel depleted, where do you turn? Rest? Exercise? Caffeine? Therapy? Retail or talk? TV? In other words, there's a difference between needs and the strategies we use to satisfy those needs. For example, freedom is a basic need. But if freedom means travel to me, what am I really looking for? What values or desires lie behind that core need? Often it's novelty, stimulation, and getting out of daily and sometimes deadening routines. It's needing some aimlessness and idleness, in contrast to my norm of purposefulness. It's learning a new language, cultures, facts, meeting new people, a slower pace with less stress. Swimming in a different sea of assumptions, getting jolted out of narrow-mindedness, tasting new food, indulging in a novel during a long flight. It's being out of town and unavailable for all the meetings and decisions that tend to whittle down my store of daily joy. But do I need to travel to faraway places to find novel experiences? Remember, substitution as a frugality strategy isn't about downgrading pleasure. It's about ensuring that I get precisely what I'm seeking for less or nothing at all. I'm not limiting myself. I'm focusing myself. Yum. Freedom from my daily routines might involve letting go of rigid standards. Let the house be less clean. Some burdensome responsibilities. Don't always say yes to those requesting my help. And some entrenched habits, like never hiring somebody to do for you what you can do for yourself. When gas prices are high, how about traveling more locally, seeing the sights within a day's drive, and discovering exotic people and places nearby? Even taking my camper to a park within 100 miles puts me in the woods or at the seashore, with all the tantalizing smells and sights. Staying closer to home also reveals some hidden treasures in your own backyard or over the backyard fence, like your beautiful flower garden or your neighbor's interesting stories. Stay put long enough, and the details and delights of where you are become more evident. See, substitution isn't deprivation. It's about getting creative. Substitution, when it's creative, also reminds us that what we seek when we buy something new is to change a feeling state. We feel hungry, for example, so we eat to have a feeling of satisfaction. We feel lonely, so we join a club or make a date to feel connected. We feel bored, so we go to a movie or read a magazine or go on a trip to feel enlivened. But most of our needs are not material. Substitution says, when you feel a desire to shop, take time to trace it back to the need and ask if creativity, rather than consumption, might best fill it. Donella Meadows cuts to the heart of it in Beyond the Limits. People don't need enormous cars. They need respect. They don't need closets full of clothes. They need to feel attractive, and they need excitement and variety and beauty. People don't need electronic equipment. They need something worthwhile to do with their lives. People need identity, community, challenge, acknowledgement, love, joy. To try to fill these needs with material things is to set up an unquenchable appetite for false solutions to real and never satisfied problems. The resulting psychological emptiness is one of the major forces behind the desire for material growth. Substitution isn't limitation. It's liberation. It's letting go of assumptions and habits, looking at the richness of reality, and picking from the smorgasbord of pleasures available right under your nose. 10. Follow the 9 steps of this program. Hundreds of thousands of people have successfully followed the steps of this program. These people have found that doing all the steps leads to a transformed experience of money and the material world. It's the transformation, not the tips, that saves them money. Mild shopping addictions evaporate. Self-denial and self-indulgence both yield to self-awareness, which ends up being a much bigger pleasure. You can use this program as a series of tips or advice, or you can let it work its magic by doing the steps. The steps are a whole system approach to money and stuff that changes your habits by changing your way of seeing. All the steps matter. They synergize to spur you on. Saving on the basics. From penny pinching to smart saving. In an earlier edition of this book, we included a section called 101 Sure Ways to Save Money. But times have changed and some of our tried and true suggestions aren't so true anymore. In addition, legions of bloggers, podcasters, and YouTubers are offering new ideas and tips every day, as well as numerous books focused on frugal, simple living. This ranges from cheap travel to cheap cooking, from do-it-yourself household fixes to how to build a home from the ground up, from growing your own food to growing your own eco-village. Finally, keep in mind that the strategies you come up with for yourself in your own life will be much more powerful than any advice of others. Consider the following story. Harry N. was looking at his wall chart and reconsidering his practice of hiring a house cleaner and gardener to take care of his home. He wasn't ready, however, to take on all that daily maintenance himself. So he came up with a surprising solution. He noticed that his family never used the large dining room. It came with the house, so they furnished it and forgot about it and ate in the family room. But with his new FI thinking, he saw that he could remodel, replacing the dining room with a studio apartment. He made the renovations and found a couple who was willing to do yard work and housework in exchange for room and board. That kind of creative thinking could never be embodied in a hints and tips list. Nevertheless, a little guidance can be extremely useful in helping to break old patterns and getting you to think creatively. So we include the following quick tips containing real-life examples of FI thinking that can save you money and buy you freedom. Managing debt and your finances. A cardinal rule of frugality is to avoid debt. After all, you've already done your time in the job for the privilege of having the money in your pocket. Why pay again and drag the ball and chain of debt around as you hobble down the road of life? Some people, the author included, manage to go through life paying cash for everything. But those people with debt for large ticket essentials, college, mortgage, car, follow the frugality rule by paying it off as quickly as possible. Unfortunately, the easiest way to borrow money, credit cards and payday loans, are also the most financially ruinous for many. We can't say enough about how important it is to pay off any balances you currently have on these high interest rate ripoffs and to completely avoid them in the future. Use a credit card for convenience, building credit or to earn points, but only if you can pay the entire balance every month. And we mean every month. Otherwise, use cash or a debit card. The same goes for car loans and making large purchases on installment plans. If you get a low or zero interest rate and have the discipline to reliably make payments, Consider it. Otherwise, wait until you've saved up enough to buy it with your own money, instead of paying interest and fees to borrow it from the bank. Some forms of debt can be viewed as an investment if the money you borrow enables you to buy an asset that appreciates in value or boosts your earning power. If you can reliably make your mortgage payment every month and you live in an area where real estate values consistently rise, as opposed to boom and bust or stagnation, having a low interest rate, fixed rate mortgage could be a wise investment, especially if you can deduct the mortgage interest from your taxes. Many people, however, will find comfort and freedom in the idea of owning their home debt-free, and therefore should figure out the best way to pay off their mortgage early. Young people often use student loans to acquire the education they need to earn a better living. While you can view this as a kind of investment in your financial future, no one wants to start out his adult life with this huge burden hanging over his head. Get scholarships and avoid student loans if you can, or if not, pay them off quickly and deduct the interest from your taxes. If you do borrow money in any of these forms, it's critical that you make your monthly payments or your credit card rating will be damaged. A low credit rating could prevent you from buying a house or renting the apartment you want, and can even raise the interest rate you'll pay on credit card debt. You should be able to do all your basic banking for free, and even earn a bit of interest if you sign on for online banking at many credit unions and banks. Credit unions exist to serve members instead of generating profit for outside shareholders, so they tend to have the lowest fees and best interest rates on your deposits. Regardless of where you bank, avoid overdrawing your account or bouncing checks, as this will usually incur a sizable fee. Use the free online banking tool available to alert you about low balances, track your expenses, and automate bill paying. Having a place to live. As we said in Chapter 3, housing is usually the most expensive item on your monthly tabulation. Urbanization is putting more of us in high-cost cities, so being creative about housing can reduce your costs significantly. Consider, for example, moving to a less expensive area or finding a housemate, easier than ever thanks to social media and Craigslist. You may well be able to keep your current job and work remotely. Also consider living in a smaller house. The average square footage of a new single-family home in 1973 was 1,660. By 2015, it was 2,687. Ask yourself if you really need that much space. While a tiny house of a couple hundred square feet might not be for you, a smaller house might meet your needs and leave you with less space to heat, cool, and clean. Explore living in an intentional community like co-housing, where you'll be able to share your life with people who share your values, while usually also lowering your expenses. If you've identified a neighborhood you like, consider finding a house to rent that isn't yet on the market. Look for telltale signs that a house isn't currently occupied, such as an untended yard or uncollected mail. Find the owner through the tax office and make it easy for her to want to rent her property to you. If you already have a house, consider renting out unused space. If you're in the market for a new home, think about buying a duplex. Living on one side and renting out the other will allow you to lower your monthly mortgage payments dramatically. Finally, technology enables some people to work from just about anywhere, which allows full-time RVers and location-independent workers, those digital nomads, to live in beautiful places around the world, often for less money than it costs to stay planted in one place. Rachel Z has a lucrative job that graded on many of her values and lots of good ideas about what she'd do if she didn't have to report to work every day. She found herself constantly thinking through alternatives, devising escape routes from a job that was beginning to feel like a prison. The FI course gave her a tunnel out, but it was her own ingenuity that turned on the light at the end of the tunnel. she realized that she could move into the lower level of her house, rent out her bedroom, and use the rental income to handle her monthly mortgage payment. She did just that, and by implementing a few other creative strategies, she managed to leave her job with